Welcome to Mobility at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert, or SME, Roundtable. Hi, I'm Sherry Battine, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. Today, I'm here with many of our IT experts that work in the enterprise mobility space here at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and get candid answers. We'd like to learn a little bit about you before we begin, so we've posted a question in your browser window. And as you answer that question, your responses will appear on the monitor in front of us, and it'll help shape how we answer your questions. I would like to ask our experts to now introduce themselves. Let's start with you, Arun.
Hi, my name is Arun Maningal. I'm a senior software engineer. My team is responsible for design, strategy, and implementation of hyperscale services that power some of our critical mobility scenarios and applications.
And hi, I'm Carmichael Patton in our information security and risk management team, focused mostly on all the non-Windows devices, iOS, Android, Macs, Linux devices.
And I'm Darren Moffitt. I'm a service engineer here at Microsoft IT, focusing on Office 365 automation and SharePoint Online.
Hi, I'm Vamsi Kolluri. I work for Information Security and Risk Management as a security program manager. I drive the security workstream for modern device management at Microsoft.
You can now start posting your questions in the window. And also, if you have any feedback for the product teams, we'd be happy to collect that up and pass that along to them after this session. We're going to make every effort in the next hour to get through all of your questions. However, if we can't, we'll stay behind in the studio and continue answering your questions and post that extended footage along with the video on Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. So let's get started. How does Microsoft IT think about access to corporate resources from personal devices? Carmichael, is that a good one for you?
I think that's a great one. I think just the ubiquitous nature of our environment and the sheer number of devices that we have at Microsoft, we probably traditionally people think it's all Windows devices, and it's not. We have 57,000 Macs at Microsoft and tens of thousands of iOS and Android devices. So a lot of those are personal, and we have to be able to manage those devices, or at least manage the applications on those devices to ensure that they the devices are healthy and compliant to our policies as they're accessing that data. So it's sort of a beast we've created for ourselves, I guess. but I think we've doing a really good job of the advances we've been making in Intune and EM at the Enterprise Mobility and Security Suite.
Are they primarily phones, or do we have a blend of
no,
tablets?
No. I think the last numbers I saw were about 227,000 Windows devices, so we have a lot of laptops and phones. Tablets are becoming quite the rage, right, the Surface and Surface Book. But then we get into the Macs. We have very large groups within Microsoft that develop for the Mac with the Outlook app for Macs and iOS and Android, so they develop all that on the platforms there. So we see, I guess, just a cross-section of all the devices. If it's out there in the retail market, we probably are supporting it. So.
Yeah. Very good.
I know that our recent acquisition, say LinkedIn, for instance, brought, was it 13,000 Macs at least? And there, a lot of our acquisitions tend to be either Mac or PC, but more specifically, they may come from an Apple startup or a startup that utilized Apple devices. And we're not quick to kick them off of those, and now, especially in the new Microsoft, our landscape is pretty good in that we embrace that, we work with it. I know I purchased a Mac recently as well to start being able to speak the same language the LinkedIn folks do, because they're pretty passionate about those devices.
So to add on to what Carmichael has said about how do we think about accessing to corporate resources from all those variety of devices, I think we kind of finalized on two big things. First one is devices should be managed and they should be healthy, and devices should be able to authenticate using multi-factor authentication or strong authentication. That's when we'll be able to allow these devices to access any corporate resources. And I think most of the work that we are driving here at Microsoft are around these two big principles.
Well, to add on to that, what advantages do you see in connecting devices to Azure Active Directory?
I think that's a great question. So today, we are just starting to see a lot of people in Microsoft realize that connecting to Azure Active Directory provides a lot of advantages. So some of them being these devices are no longer on domain joined, so there's no issues around NTLM, Kerberos, so your credential theft attacks like pass the hash attack, pass the ticket attack, et cetera, are all gone away. And the way that we have designed our device management at Microsoft is when you join your device to Azure Active Directory, it's automatically managed through Intune. So we have a very good grip about inventory. We control how these devices access our resources like internet, Wi-Fi, VPN, et cetera, et cetera. So I think our story around security is improving with, you know, just by using Azure Active Directory at Microsoft.
And I think it does not just limit itself to the devices alone. It also extends to the services landscape, which are key, because there's no point in just securing your devices alone if you're not able to access your services and data that you really want. Having the common substrate of Azure Active Directory also hooked up to your applications as such helps in getting that consistency across in the way we also determine what access, who and when they get as well.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the right point, right? Which is it's sort of this cross capability that we're developing that's just, it doesn't matter what you're on,
exactly.
Right? We want that experience, and I think Satya has talked about this as well, right? We want that experience that you can go from your phone to your tablet to your PC and back again, and the shared experience across all of those devices is what we're really trying to target. And I think with what both Vamsi and Arun have said, that's exactly what we're trying to do. And I think we're getting so much better at it with the Enterprise Mobility and Security Suite and the interaction with conditional access and Intune. So.
So just to provide an example to what Arun and Carmichael were saying just now, if you look at Cortana on Windows, that's exactly how you can leverage Azure Active Directory. Right, so now you can actually sign into Cortana using Azure Active Directory, and that's a great experience because now you can share this experience across other devices where you're signed in using your Azure Active Directory instance. And shared experiences is a new feature that Windows has introduced in a recent creators update.
Yeah.
So Cortana can be your assistant no matter what device.
Yeah.
And the promise of that, and the promise of the ubiquitous nature that it's really about the mobility of your experience and not just your device is truly coming to light and accelerated as we have additional features released as part of our updates that come out.
Very good. How do you evolve legacy thinking of parameter-based security postures from corporate IT security to the reality that the parameter no longer exists with enterprise mobility? It is a real struggle in most organizations.
It's a fantastic question. And that's exactly what we are seeing today at Microsoft. All the traditional legacy thinking around network is your perimeter, we'll just put in a lot of security controls here around your network, like your IDS, IPS, firewall, et cetera. That kind of mentality needs to change. Today, employees are embracing mobility, and they want to be mobile, they want to be able to work from home, work remotely from a Starbucks or from any location. And we should be able to protect our resources, our corporate resources, and especially data, in this particular world. So in this new world, I think we should truly embrace the fact that identity is the new perimeter, and we should work or develop all our scenarios, we should develop all our products around this particular fact that identity is the new perimeter. So for a simple example in Microsoft, what we used to do is we used to have a lot of security controls for data loss prevention on our edge. But now that is like the past. We are moving away from network as a traditional edge, and identity is a new perimeter. So most of our new controls that we are building, like Windows Information Protection, or let's look at RMS, all these controls, these are things that we are building as identity is the perimeter.
I know one interesting thing we're doing in the Office 365 space is we are trying to move away from the use of things that typically had to run on VMs, like service accounts, where you have to manage a password and reset it and be on a corporate network to do so, or on a Windows machine. One of the biggest pushes we're making in the application development space for SharePoint Online and Office 365 is to move to AAD-connected apps, where you get a client secret from our identity team, Your app goes through security approval. Once you get it, your basic management at that point is simply of a client secret, which is much easier for a developer on a go to pop that into your XML file, republish your app, and you don't have to worry about running VMs with service accounts. You don't have to be worried about a password expiring on a service account and then desperately trying to find, oh, I'm not on the corporate network. I can't reset this password. Our app is about to go down. It's fire an email. Guys, I need a new client secret. Boom, here's your new one. Publish and you're good, and you can do that all from almost pretty much from any device now. That's been a big improvement in our O365 space.
Just to reinforce the identity aspect that Vamsi spoke about and what Darren also touched upon, the experience of getting that identity as a perimeter is really brought together by Azure Active Directory, not just on devices, but also on your services or applications that you develop. So having a product that really ensures you have umbrella protection through one experience is a great boon for our customers when they go and use it to the full potential.
Well, I think we have to, I think we have to also think about the fact that we have now Azure and the big footprint that we have in Azure. What is the sort of the enterprise, or what does the corp net look like, and what, you know, how does that expand once you add cloud services in with PaaS and SaaS solutions, right? Yeah. So we have to sort of get out of that old thinking into this new realm of, well, how do I actually use these things? And I think that's actually been a really fun road that I've been on for the last 2 years since I started here. So it's been to see the way the company, Microsoft, has actually gone through this roadmap ourselves, and a lot of the new features that are even still to come, it's pretty exciting.
And the footprint is something we can't just rub it off, because we definitely have the largest footprint of any other cloud service providers, which effectively means that for an upcoming small and medium businesses, they don't have to worry about setting up their own corporate network. They have it on the cloud. They can use it once they configure it. And it's not just for the small and medium businesses. It's also it's also an aspect that can be leveraged by established enterprises for their small experimentation labs or aspects which may not require that full plethora of things that traditionally would have been available in a in-house network.
And I think the interesting thing is the natural transition we're seeing away from the concept of an intranet. Mm-hmm. I know the great work that you guys have been doing has been rolling out these modern experiences, modern security. Being an engineer that also runs a lot of on-prem services, I've noticed that they're just naturally being used less and less. It's not that we're forcing them off, or we're moving their sites, or saying, guys, you gotta get off the intranet. Mm-hmm. They're just naturally kind of packing their stuff up, because they're finding the mobile experiences in Office 365 are kind of appealing to their mobile nature. So it's been kind of a natural transition for us in O365. As security and identity start to make it much easier for people to say, hey, I can take my laptop anywhere. I don't have to worry about connecting to a corporate intranet or whether or not my VPN is going to work properly. It's just so appealing. The transition from our internal corp has almost required very little. I mean, it's required a lot of work on our part, but it's required very little work to kind of get people to see that value.
So as a closing thought, one thing that I also want to mention is, so yes, we've been talking a lot about this client space, but also I want to call out that network as a perimeter will definitely shrink, but I think it will remain in place, because some of our high-risk environments, some of our critical resources, like for example, your domain controllers or some of the age-old things that you still have to run for your organization, will probably still remain on-premises, and you'll still have a network perimeter around these critical resources and how you secure them. So it will shrink. So instead of probably managing a million devices and putting a perimeter around that, now you're looking at only couple of probably 50 to 100,000 devices, right? So the perimeter will shrink. I don't think it will go away immediately.
Even then, you get the consistency of managing these experiences. As opposed to managing it using different tools, you get that same tool to use that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, I am trying use SSO, but I don't know can I integrate SAP GUI client? So SSO,
single sign-on.
So I'm not, do we have anybody here who?
I think that's a more app-specific question that has to be addressed, specific to the scenario or the whole capability that they're trying to accomplish, especially given the SAP GUIs have been changing, what version?
Yeah.
That has implications on that.
That's a tricky question because, of course, you know, SAP being a third-party tool does try to play nice with multiple SSO configurations. Yeah. And it can be tough to kind of definitively say, what do you need to do to
unless we understand the scenario and the capability that they're trying
to like. What's the SSO being leveraged? What version of SAP is being used? Exactly. That would be the type of unknowns that makes that a little bit hard to address. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. What additional costs do you incur to get the desired amounts of ability SLAs in your service vis-a-vis hosting on-premises? So services versus on-premise. Mm-hmm. Is there...
Great question, actually. So traditionally, the promise of the cloud as people adopted was, hey, it's going to be cheap. It's going to be a cost equation. But that's not necessarily true. You do get intangible benefits out of hosting your services on the cloud versus on-premises. And that's where the cost benefits really start to that's where you start realizing the cost benefits. Not necessarily compare your CapEx versus the OpEx cost that would be happening on the cloud, yes, they would be amortized. But if you look at it through the lens of, hey, you know what, I have some on-prem devices or on-prem machines, I need to now put my services on the cloud. That is definitely going to be a costly proposition to start off because you already had your sunken costs on your on-prem infrastructure that you procured and invested in. So really, initially on, it has to be a cultural mindset about you're paying for the agility versus just the dollar amount that you see on the balance sheet. So once you have that cultural mind shift, what helps is you come out of the bureaucratic controls that you would associate yourself with the on-prem infrastructure access that your multiple IT departments would have requirements of. Whereas in the cloud, you would have your enterprise agreements or you might have your pay-as-you-go scenarios wherein you are consuming them based on your needs and requirements. So that's really the lens through which you need to look at this cost proposition.
I think, Arun, one of the other things with cloud migration and transition rate is that we sort of did this ourselves, where we said, let's just take the data center and move it to the cloud.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't really the right way to do it, right? I mean, exactly. there's other things we probably should have focused on, and I think that's where you end up with the, well, it just cost me the same thing because all I did was recreate my data center in the cloud, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe to your point you were making, I think, which is, that there's PaaS solutions or SaaS solutions.
Yeah.
So what was it you really were trying to do? Was it you were trying to get this service where we basically manage it for you, and then you just deploy your application on it, right? I think that's where you can see some of those cost benefits come, but it's how do you reframe that conversation from the traditional thinking, back to what we were talking about earlier, right? That traditional thinking of, I have to build my data center and I have to secure my things, to I'm gonna trust somebody else to do this, and I'm putting my trust in Microsoft to do it, and now I just need to focus on the things I need to focus on, right?
Just to add on to that, right, the lift and shift scenarios that you mentioned about, they are not definitely going to give you the maximum bang for your buck. It's when you really look at your scenarios, re-architect them on PaaS or SaaS, is when you really start achieving the benefits that the cloud provides.
Yeah, very good. And also, I was thinking, you know, in the old world, when you wanted that server, it could take a lot of time for you even to get the physical hardware in.
Yep,
and
today,
you were talking about agility. It's like flipping a switch.
Yes, absolutely. And you don't have to also worry about the IT personal maintenance that they would have to do with patchings or any other sort of things that comes associated with owning the infrastructure yourself. On the cloud, what you're really assuming is if you really use your high-end services, you are freed from those hassles, so to speak, which can sometimes be very critical, especially if there are security patches that have to be applied within a certain time frame and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Very good. Beyond identity boundary, corporate security still wants application device controls, which is complicated by the fact that most mobile application APIs are proprietary. Examples include Office Mobile requires Intune, SaaS Mobile access controlled with each SaaS application. How does IT manage enterprise mobility in its heterogeneous hybrid environment? Is that that a good question for you, Carmichael?
I was looking at Vamsi, but I can tell you.
Well, both of you.
So I think that's a very complex problem that we face day to day at Microsoft, right? We have a huge heterogeneous set of devices at Microsoft. And for all the mobile devices today, we rely heavily upon Intune for doing our modern management or device management for these devices. Then yes, you are right. It depends upon the API that the device actually provides back through its MDM channels for us to be able to go and manage. So let's say you want to deploy encryption capabilities or you want to deploy firewall capabilities on a device. The API that is provided on a Windows device is not the same as the device that is the API that is being provided on an iPhone or an Android. So I think we are, yes, being challenged today on how we go and deploy some of these security controls at Microsoft. So what we do is we take a risk-based approach. So we take a look at the specific set of devices, let's say Windows, and we take a look at the list of controls that we want to go and implement. And we'll see what is available and then go and deploy those specific controls. But for the non-Windows space, I'll have Carmichael speak to it because he's
maybe I'm understanding the question a little differently because I think I'm actually looking over your shoulder to make sure I get it right.
Go ahead.
I think there's the complexity that we have. We talk about this in the EMS suite, right, where we use Azure Active Directory to manage our identity for our Office 365, Skype, those things, right? And I think those APIs, I think what the question is those APIs are proprietary to the Microsoft suite of apps. And yes, so for conditional access, if you want to do conditional access across your entire suite, we require you to use that Azure Active Directory conduit to sort of manage that identity for you, right? But there are, if I'm understanding the question correctly, there are other APIs that are proprietary. So how do I sort of manage that stack? And I'm not entirely sure I'm the right one to answer that, but I think there is some work and if you're finding that you have an issue, for example, with a mobile device management system that you're leveraging, then I would reach out to the folks, your sales team, and ask them or post that feedback back to us and what the applications you're having those issues with the APIs are, because there is work being done, I know within the Intune team, to try to manage some API connections to sort of facilitate that mm-hmm. I guess, conversation across APIs. So definitely give us that feedback back if you're having some issues with those things. I don't know if you've experienced that with any of the stuff you guys are building, Darren, but because you're mostly Microsoft products, so you're using our APIs.
We do have some third-party APIs, and actually, to build off what you said, one of the key things that we do when we run into those complications or if an API is proprietary, our hands are effectively tied in those cases. So building up a great relationship with the developers of those products, not listing anything specifically, but some of the products that we work with when we encounter issues, for instance, with the way that it may authenticate. Rather than trying to deal with it ourselves, we kind of engage with the developers. They love it because usually we're the canary in the coal mine. It's like, hey, if Microsoft's starting to have this problem or they're really pushing for a new authentication model for our migration tooling, for instance, or something of that nature, then maybe this is something other customers are going to start to encounter. So that is kind of our process usually is to reach out to the developers. As Sherry said, we have a direct line to our first-party product groups, but we also like to establish those direct lines to third-party product groups as well. They love it, we love it, and it kind of helps us at least work around that proprietary API block that sometimes we definitely all as customers hit with those third-party providers.
Mm-hmm. And we have a reply from the question asker. Mm-hmm. MAM controls and SaaS mobile apps are all unique to EMM solution and the mobile application solution. So
if we're talking more about the MAM solutions, I know that with the new release coming, I believe in May, with Intune and mobile application management, there's a better integration with the app stores and the capabilities that we can wrap directly from the stores themselves, so reaching into the Apple Store or reaching into the Play Store, grabbing the applications and wrapping those things. I don't know the exact date that's actually getting released, but I believe it's May sometime. So
So could you talk a little bit about how we do manage apps for the Android space and for the iOS, or for the Apple space, for our multitude hybrid environment of devices?
Yeah, multitude of hybrid environments. So right now, today, we use company portals. So we deploy all of our applications through company portal for our line of business apps. And then we do mobile device management more than we do the application management. I know, like I said, with the features coming soon, there is a lot of investigation in that. Because I think it goes back to the first question, which was how do we sort of manage that corporate data? There's different user experiences that we may want to facilitate that allow us to maybe just go with that application management versus the device management. So I would say that the feature set of MAM wasn't as robust as it was, but it will be getting better from what I've seen. So maybe there's a roadmap there. I think right now today our organization, the security organization, has said the way we're going to move forward right now is with device management, but there's possibilities in the future. So.
Okay, very good.
I hope that answered Max's question.
All right. How do we protect Wi-Fi and VPN access from unmanaged devices?
That gets especially interesting now with our recent rollout of our guest network.
So,
I'll let you take that one. Yeah.
Okay. So this goes back to one of our first questions around how do we allow devices to access corporate resources. So Wi-Fi, VPN, we treat them at par with any other corporate resources, right? So with Wi-Fi today, the way that we do this is most of the corporate network, actually all the corporate network Wi-Fi access points use 802.1x. So the devices should be enrolled with Microsoft, and then they receive a certificate. Using this certificate, they authenticate to the Wi-Fi, the corporate Wi-Fi at Microsoft. So devices being managed is very important. So there are exceptions that are in place, just like any other enterprise, where we have to allow for testing scenarios. But for our specific corporate network, that's what we do. Then we also have guest wireless network. So in the guest wireless networks, we let people, so whoever is a sponsor for the guest will have to take care of providing him access through authentication back to our Azure Active Directory. So that's the second thing. And last but not the least, the VPN is again based on a device certificate. So in Windows 10, we have auto VPN capability. So when the device is actually enrolled with either Intune or domain joined and managed through SECM, they receive a certificate. And the certificate will automatically allow them to connect to the VPN solution.
I'm sorry, Bob. Yeah, that actually works across all of our devices, right? So you register in Intune, and it does a health check on your device, and then we push the certificates for both the Wi-Fi and the VPN through those. So
I was just about to say that VPN also requires two-factor authentication, not just device certificate. So if you are doing a VPN from any of your devices, you're actually asked to perform multi-factor authentication. This could be using Windows Hello for Business or your smart cards or the phone authentication app that you have on your phones.
How has Microsoft Teams improved the mobility story at Microsoft?
That's a good one, because my team's been kind of immersed in it to the point where we've actually asked our team not to use anything besides Microsoft Teams. And actually, it has played a really big part in our LinkedIn acquisition. So a lot of smaller companies, or in this case, startups that have kind of evolved into an enterprise like LinkedIn, they've kind of been built using those quick and easy tools, like Slack, for instance. So for us, it's been a great way to bridge that gap. Teams kind of merges, I think, a lot of the stuff that we liked about email, but as well as a lot of the stuff that we liked about IM, minus some of the randomizations that kind of come with you know, instant messaging. Mm-hmm. Teams has kind of taken those best parts and put them together. So you load the client up on either pretty much any device you like, and you've got your equivalent of distribution groups, which are the teams, and in going inside, you have that persistent chat. I think one of the things that's certainly helped us eliminate is that thread forking and thread bleeding that you see with Exchange or any email client, where suddenly it's like you add somebody into a thread and they're like, what just went on? Or I feel like I'm missing something. It's like, oh yeah, sorry, the thread forked like five replies earlier. With Teams, because you've got that persistent chat, people can kind of pick up the conversation, get themselves briefed. You can add other people in. They can pick up the conversation. It's very linear. It certainly helped us from a mobility space in that if you have to have one tool on your phone, for me, for instance, I don't actually keep email on my phone. Corporate email doesn't belong on my personal device, but I do have Microsoft Teams. And it does allow me to have those conversations without having a Skype client and an Outlook client and Slack client. I have this Teams client, and right now it's been great. It's allowed us to kind of keep our phones lightweight, which is great if you're somebody who's picked up a device that has a limited amount of space on it, one app to kind of rule them all in your collaborations here.
On a side note, as you touched upon it, it's fostering a more open culture as well in development teams, or it's not just siloed communication that is happening, because the kind of distribution groups that you could create can be spanning virtual teams or your actual team, and that's also helping culturally, not just reducing the volume on the exchange, but
I think the transition to Teams is an interesting one, right? Because we focused everything around Office and mm-hmm. and Skype, but it wasn't really the right way to do those types of communications. Correct. Right? So being able to take the Office experience, then Groups experience, and then the Teams experience, mm-hmm. it allows us to build those teams, yeah. right? Whether it's virtual or your own team itself, and share those things across it. Until you said like the persistency of that, right?
So someone joining a team at a later date can just go through the conversation and get the context of what is happening.
Exactly.
What is the space that you're doing?
And with the mention feature, I can mention any one of you guys, and instead of having you CC'd or two replied or randomizing you in which your reply may not even reach mm-hmm. the rest of the group. It's like, hey, I can at mention one of you. You get the context of why I'm mentioning you in this thread, that you can jump in right away and answer the immediate question. If you're like, okay, this is an interesting conversation, yeah, you're right. You can mm-hmm. go back and review it. So I think Teams has kind of brought out the best of what we've been trying to envision of mobility to be, that collaboration, that togetherness, being able to involve everybody in the culture, it's helped immensely.
Not to mention, you can also do bots and Teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Teams is, I think, just one of those great examples where Microsoft is bringing together all those fantastic features like Groups, SharePoint, email, IM, all of them together into a single solution. So
including your Visual Studio check-ins,
right.
your
bills,
you call it. I mean, so it's just, it's more built as a platform. So it's not a closed ecosystem. So if you have certain capabilities that you want to hook on as part of the conversation that is floating around, you can also do it yourself. So
the bot framework,
that's really very exciting.
Yeah, and that's a great point on the bot framework. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the things that we're experimenting with, especially with the group chat, is the ability to have a bot go in, for instance, and you can say, can you reserve a conference room for everybody on this team? The bot can go in and let everybody know if it's been if it's been booked, if it hasn't, whether or not it's been changed. You know, one of the biggest problems sometimes we have is meeting rooms change. It's a little harder to track that on meeting invites.
Yeah.
But if you have a bot kind of getting into the conversation and engaging, it makes it much easier for everybody to kind of see those changes. And going back to the one app to rule them all, it used to be if you had like a proprietary bot, somebody would be like, well, okay, go here and download my app and sideload it. But we all know sideloading isn't necessarily the best way to approach this stuff. But by having a app that is in the app store where you can go in and say, great, well, I need to reserve this, or maybe I want to go and engage this bot, having an app where you can do it in kind of a natural language, it's something we're very interested in. I know something that in our space where we're looking to evolve further.
And I'm aware of certain customer case studies also wherein they have repurposed Teams for the field agents or people on the field as well, because that really opens up a very unique scenario. Since it comes automatically with their Office subscription, they are, or if you're having an E5 queue, it automatically comes with that. They're able to open up a lot of scenarios which were not possible till that point in time. That's an exciting space.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Darren's example, right? It's the one app on his phone that he wants because it's quick communication to the team. It has access to the stuff he wants to access without having to worry about the email drop and getting buried and lost in there. So
exactly.
Sounds great. What can be done to prevent specific vulnerable platforms from connecting to Microsoft corporate resources?
Sounds like a Carmichael question.
That's actually a really great question because the non-Windows space is becoming the more prevalent. I think about, in fact, there was just another announcement with some more apps in the Play Store that are now vulnerable. Intune, I think, is pretty familiar with. We manage it through Intune. So the fact that we can check whether or not a device is compliant or it has the right VPN, excuse me, not VPN, but like it has a malware tool on it, so we can actually leverage that and then the feedback from the tool to tell us whether or not a device is actually healthy or has malware on it. Or if it's jailbroken or if it's whatnot. There's also the capability within Intune itself to say, I need my devices to all be on this OS version, right? So make sure that I'm on the latest Android version, maybe -1, just to make sure that I have all the security patches that I want. I think that's the way we manage it today.
So. I know the one thing we're looking at with our partners here in ISRM is conditional access.
Right.
Conditional access is something we haven't quite rolled out at Microsoft, but we're in the process. And how it affects Office 365, for instance, and specifically SharePoint is what I'll speak to, is it allows devices that we may not necessarily have a lot of trust for to still have access, but very limitedly. So for instance, if you whip out an Android device that, for instance, may not be able to be Intune managed, because as Carmichael said, it may be a slightly outdated operating system, or it may be a variant that we don't necessarily support, we still allow, for instance, read-only access, but we wouldn't allow you to potentially edit or download a document. So it's the conditional access is great for like those field sellers, for instance, or field people that are, I need a document, but I can't, I don't have a device, or maybe I left my laptop in the car, all I have is this phone, but I never Intune managed it. They can still get the SharePoint online, they can still get the documents that they need and quickly read them, but they wouldn't be able to download them. So that's kind of the space we're exploring. It's a little more complex, because of course we're working with you guys, but we're also trying to understand, like, okay, with every application, SharePoint, Skype, Teams, what does it look like in terms of what do we do when we severely limit somebody, and what do we consider acceptable for a non-managed device? And of course, if you're Intune managed, you get everything.
Yeah, Darren, yes, I will make one slight change in that the conditional access piece you're talking about is more the enforcement piece. We actually do manage and monitor those things. My boss is probably yelling at me if we don't say we do, right?
absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But to your point, right, it's the complexity of the platform in that the conditional access is, I won't say new, but it's fairly new, right? The abilities to do those things around the Office applications that allow us to check for those things and then lock down the access, not just through the device lockdown and not allowing the device, but also the browsers and the applications themselves, right? So that capability and getting that working, the complexity of the fact that those are our tools and those are the tools that our employees are using, and there's a lot of employees using them, we want to make sure we do it right, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the complexity we're talking about, right? Is we don't want to just block everybody from being able to access, because at the end of the day, if my boss can't get to the document I'm trying to send him, then I'm out of work. So
yeah, and one piece that we're using to kind of augment all of that is the Microsoft Cloud App Security.
Yeah,
relatively new, at least to my space. But one of the things we're looking at and touching on the complexity Carmichael called out is what are some of the events that we want to be monitoring on these devices, or more specifically on the users? Is there mass changes being made? Are mass files being downloaded? Those are the things that MCAS, Microsoft Cloud App Security, lets you do. And from the administration of O365, it's something we're looking at is, okay, if you hook up a device and say it's an Android device and suddenly we start seeing like more than 10 changes happening, that might be something we want to look at from a security perspective. So Cloud App Security is kind of a new frontier for us, at least in the collaboration services space, but it's an exciting one because it's allowing us to be a little more, I'm not going to say proactive, but quickly reactive in
Yeah, I think so. That's exactly right. Which is within the last year, the acquisitions we've made, MCAS being one of those, formerly Adalom, right, and the partnerships that they have with other acquisitions that we brought in, like Secure Islands, which is now Azure Information Protection, right. Those different things we're now able to layer on top of that conditional access, and the abilities that we can then block the document from being viewed, or at least see where it's gone and who's using it and who's opened it and whatnot, right. That new frontier is allowing us to do a lot more things than we were able to do before. And I think, Bonsi, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say that as we talk about enterprise mobility and how we want to make you know, life easier for like an employee at an organization, we also want to think about security, and conditional access really tees off there, because you are able to provide user the amount of mobility and all at the same time make sure that your enterprise is still secure with, by, you know, deploying this conditional access controls and making sure that the device is indeed healthy before it's able to actually access any corporate resources, let it be your email, let it be SharePoint or Skype or, you know, any other resources.
Okay, thank you. I am searching for some scenario in EMS with a functionality easy to implement and with high impact in my company. What is your opinion?
I think it will be a Carmichael specific to EMS. It's the EMS feed, right?
Yeah, the easy button. Oh, if there was an easy button.
High impact.
Yeah, high impact, right? I think with the new release coming with Intune and bringing that into the Azure world and the Ibiza portal and having that ability to manage your environment, not just your Azure Active Directory users, but your whole mobile device fleet and your application fleet, having that in one place now versus having to have the multiple portals where I had to go to Azure to do one thing, I had to go to my Intune portal to do another thing, I had to do my O365 in one place, I had to do my SharePoint in another place. Right, I think bringing those experiences together does make it easier. Bringing in the Azure Active Directory pieces on top, sits on top of those, managing my users and their access that they have makes it a little bit easier as well. I'm still personally waiting for the easy button. But I think somebody touched on it earlier, yeah. Right? First and best, that's sort of what our organization, Microsoft IT, is. It's first and best. And it's sometimes looking at those products and saying, hey guys, you know, the experience that we're having as one of your biggest customers, which we really are a customer of those groups too, right? We need to make it easier. And I think the feedback that we've given is hopefully driving this so that we get that easy button.
This is one approach we have taken to make big impact changes, is really to look at the scenarios rather than go after a tool or product and say, hey, we've implemented this. Unless and until your users consume it or there is no usage, that big impact does not tend to come out. So it's also prudent to look at the scenario and then look at what are the capabilities in the product that I could be using, one of which could be using making use of the Ibiza portal's consistent experience to manage multiple devices.
I was about to say that if you're asking about scenarios, think about what are the core scenarios that are important for your organization. So I don't know if you'll have an easy button to implement scenarios, but think about device inventory, device management, conditional access, and other areas that you probably want to go and invest. And I would strongly urge you to work with the Microsoft rep that you have at your location to see how you can implement any of these. All of these are available today, and you should be able to go and implement any of them. I'm sorry, there is no magic button to go and do all of this for you, but with proper planning, I think it is very easy to go and implement them. We definitely do this at Microsoft, and we use these features, so that's why I strongly urge you to work with your Microsoft representative.
Okay. Can you discuss how Microsoft IT manages ecosystem of mobile devices, personal and corporate, with Intune MDM and what they can and cannot do? For instance, is a corporate device the only thing to access high-risk applications, or does it not matter as the policy and requirements are the same for both personal and corporate?
Yeah, actually, high-risk environments doesn't use Intune. We have what we call the Secure Access Workstation, and it's actually the POV for the customers. We require a stricter control for getting access to the things that are in the high risk environments. Where we see the mobile device management is more on the information worker, and it's more around just the device health policies, I'll call them, right? So it's more the things we're managing are the whether the password or PIN is on, the complexity of those things. Is there anti-malware installed? Is the device encrypted? You know, I think there's a core set of maybe 8 or 9 policies that we really sort of focus in on to make sure. I think when we get into from there, there's sort of a drill down. So if you have a, you know, malware detection tool on your thing, whether or not that malware is actually being detected on your device, then reports in, which then says you're unhealthy too, right? So it's that sort of unhealthy check that we do there. I don't know, Vamsi, if you want to talk maybe a little bit about the privileged access
workstations. And we should say first, SAW is secure access.
Secure access workstations, and privileged access workstation, I think it's the PAW, I believe.
So what I was about to say is we actually have two different user scenarios. So if you look at it, we have administrators and then we have IT workers, as we call. So IT workers are regular employees like myself, like program managers, sales and marketing employees, HR, legal, all these people who just need access to informational resources, SharePoint, email, Skype for Business probably. Then there are this other set of folks, administrators, who access high-risk applications, high-risk environments, which are in data centers. So they are supposed to work basically on a SAW device, which is Secure Admin Workstation. And these devices are extremely restricted in capability on what they can do and what they can connect to. And that's for administrator. For a regular IT worker, this is where we've been talking about those conditional access policies. And the maturity of how we deployed some of these policies or how we manage these devices is different across the different platforms. So for example, the amount of management that we do today on a Windows device is versus what we do on an iOS can be vastly different based on what is the capability that is provided by the platform, what is a third-party tool set that we might have integrated with any of these specific platforms, et cetera.
Again, touching on that SAW aspect, right? The administrator access or the privilege is not persistent. It is really just in time. That is what SAW also helps you. SAW doesn't help you. Essentially, the group policy enforces that just-in-time access, and SAW, you can only access these environments through your SAW device is what
exactly.
So a little bit of clarification. The high risk was more like financial systems or high value data versus
that would still be still an information worker thing.
So yes and no. So that's a great question, I think, and thanks for the clarity. So I imagine there'll be definitely IT worker roles like probably HR who will be or in the finance who might be accessing SharePoint sites which might have like high business value data, something around company results or email which might be containing really sensitive email. So I think over here we are in the journey to go and deploy some of these controls. So for specific platforms we were able to go and deploy, so we basically take a risk-based approach. We do threat modeling, we come up with what are the security risks involved with securing this data, and then we go and deploy those controls. Simple things being, does the device run anti-malware? Does the device have encryption controls on top of it? Can we go and do collect event logs if the device is compromised? Can we do incident response, et cetera, right? So basing on the different platforms, like I've said, on the capabilities that are being provided by each platforms, we go and deploy these controls. So today, if you're looking at a Windows device, we can actually go, like a Windows mobile phone, you can go and enable encryption on the device. On iOS, you can go and enable encryption. So if somebody is browsing email from their iOS device, we can at least be sure that, hey, this device is not jailbroken, this device is encrypted, and they have a PIN on that device, right? So at least the basic principles are already there.
So instead of a they can't do something on a device, it's we make sure the device is ready and able to do it. So
yes.
By layering in the controls that you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I think we have, I think, Varun, you mentioned it, right? We really have two personas, right? We have the information worker and we have the administrator, right? I think it's an interesting scenario because as more and more of the features with EMS come out, maybe there's some additional profiles that we could leverage in the way we actually will manage those things across those profiles, right? So maybe we'll use Darren as the example.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't need email, he just wants his team access. So potentially what we could do is use MAM to wrap that team application to make sure that the controls we require for you to access that corporate data are in place. Whereas, you know, somebody who, I think to the person who's asking the question, right, so somebody needs access to that financial data or that sales data or those back-end systems that are really sort of that, we call them the high business impact, right,
HBI.
Although I think that's changing. That HBI data. So if I need access to that, then we maybe say, no, you need a MDM managed solution, so we're going to push that to your device and we get all those policies that Vamsi's talked about, right? So
also I want to make sure that we call out multi-factor authentication, not just device management, but you also need to make sure that the user who's accessing this data is strongly authenticated. So he or she is using multi-factor authentication in order to prove that he's really the person who's accessing the data, right? You just don't want only device management controls and let the user access using a simple password like 123456. You want to make sure that there is strong authentication also.
I have to change my password.
I was going to add to that. What we're doing in our space is, especially to help out our folks in identity and ISN security, is we are really overhauling our classification. You know, one of the requirements we have in the collaborative services space is that any of the new products are going to have to start embracing classification. So we do have some products in O365 that may not necessarily allow us to classify that data on the back end. That's changing. It is something we're working with the product groups to say, guys, you know, the same type of classification that we need for Teams, for instance. So one thing we don't see on a Microsoft Teams is that every group has a classification on the back end. We're starting to pressure our product groups to also add that classification to anything from, you know, SharePoint to Staff Hub to say, guys, there has to be a classification mechanic. It's going to help our security teams. It's going to help our risk management folks say, okay, if this is branded HBI when we pull it, then you know, this is the type of expectations we have. If it's LBI, low business impacting, these are the expectations we have. And that's been a very important thing to us, because we don't necessarily have a consistent classification experience right now in O365. And that's something that we're actually working with the product groups to get, to say we need to have that level playing field.
Yeah, and I think the intent is, once we can get that driven into the tools themselves or the applications themselves, is then we could leverage that classification to say, hey, this is a highly confidential email with an attachment, don't deliver it to a device.
Yeah.
Or if you do, make sure that device is healthy and has the right policies on it, right? So that, I think that's the, to Darren's point, right? That's the direction we want to be able to get to, so.
Okay, fabulous. We are near the end of our hour now, and I would like to ask our SMEs one final question, and that is, what is the one tip you would like to leave our customers with today? And how about we start with you, Vansi?
So I think Microsoft is making tremendous investments in enterprise mobility and security space. I especially work in this particular area, and I'm super excited about the direction that we are going. We at Microsoft are also in a exciting journey in transitioning all our traditionally managed devices from domain joined to an Azure Active Directory joined Intune managed management scenario. So this is a really exciting time to be and to, you know, live through this journey. So I'd really invite all of you to explore this options around enterprise mobility and security that Microsoft has to offer.
My biggest tip would be to explore the wealth of apps that we have. They really are becoming conduits to our Office 365 service offering. And you know, with the app stores and iOS, Android, Windows Phone, we're constantly adding new applications. I mean, it's worth revisiting weekly, play with them, use them, find out which ones you like. It really is becoming kind of the desired way to access mobility in our O365 space.
And I think to kind of carry on that theme, right, it's that it's just not just the applications themselves or the devices themselves, but it just goes across your entire experience as a person, right? It's all of the devices that you would have, whether it's your iOS or Android or Macs, you know, just that shared experience that's going across to empower us all, right?
Yeah. One aspect that I would touch upon is that with mobility, you also have advantage of getting signals from additional signals than that would have got traditionally. And what these, you could also move the needle in your enterprise and your customer scenarios by making use of these signals through machine learning, use the telemetry data that you collect from these mobility, either from your applications or from your instrumentation log, to understand the usage pattern scenario and really deliver apps directed around these. So that also means you would have more bang for your buck. So that's one tip that you would have to leverage in the mobility scenarios when you light up.
Very well. We are now at the top of the hour, and I want to thank our SMEs for coming out today, stepping away from your day jobs to answer questions from our customers. Truly very important. I do want to thank our customers for joining us today. We love your questions and the opportunity to come talk to you about the work we do here at Microsoft IT. You can find this video posted on Microsoft.com/IT Showcase, along with a wealth of other videos, and articles, technical case studies. We also post our productivity guides for you to use. These are guides that we use to get all of our employees up to speed on the latest and greatest technologies every day. We put them out there for you to use within your own organizations. So We do these live events every week. We welcome you back. Please bring your colleagues with you. Thank you, and have a great day.